society and how they're coming to grips with the dichotomies that divide her. But is it just the old saws of right versus left, red versus blue states, Republicans versus Democrats? The author of the book and Vronich's president, Michael Adams, argues no. We'll talk to him about the America he sees through his research and analysis. In 2004, Michael Adams won the prestigious Donner Prize for Best Book on Public Policy for his bestseller, Fire and Ice, The United States, Canada, and the Myth of Converging Values. He's in Vancouver this morning and joins me on the line. Please welcome to thecommentary.ca, Michael Adams. Good morning, Mr. Adams.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us. Before we get to the book, you are a pollster. So I think I should ask you about the current election campaign that we're in the midst of. I looked at your touring schedule for this book, and I noticed that you were in Alberta this week. You're
yes.
in Ontario and Quebec next week.
Right.
How does the campaign look to you from the places that you've been in?
Well, you're asking a pollster who spent his time talking to taxi cab drivers, not one of whom is voting conservative, even in Alberta. So there's your random sample of taxi cab drivers. However, I'm also a pollster who surveys public opinion the good old-fashioned way by phoning people or doing it on the Internet or in-home interviews aren't done very much anymore. And it's certainly apparent that roughly 4 in 10 Canadians are intending to vote conservative, around 3 in 10 liberal, and somewhat less than 2 in 10 New Democrat and 1 in 10 for the Bloc. And that will give us a very strong conservative government, minority government, and may even be a majority.
How many, this builds into a theme that you write about in the book about the United States, but I'll take it to a Canadian context for just a moment. How many in 10 are actually going to vote?
Oh, probably about 60%. If it's about the same as the last time. It may be higher this time because, you know, this is the most interesting election maybe since 1988, or, I don't know, choose your favorite election, but it's pretty exciting. You know, when a government is on the verge of defeat, that's it hasn't happened since 1993. So we may get our turnout rates up a bit. Well, we'll see. It may still be only about 6 and 10.
I've always wanted to ask a pollster, when you see polls in the paper or on television, if you're an informed voter, an informed consumer of media, what should you look for in a poll, and should you trust its findings from a cursory read of it?
Remember, we're getting the horse race numbers. I'll tell you, the Canadian pollsters have been very accurate when it comes to public opinion, or at least voting. You know, they usually are within that advertised margin of error of a couple of percentage points. So I would be astounded if the conservative vote were much less than 38% and much more than 42%. But remember, we've got a few days to go yet. The Liberals are launching a bunch of attack ads, this could have some effect, although I'm a bit skeptical. But again, I'm like everybody else. If things change a bit, then it's up to the pollsters to measure that. They're not changing public opinion, they're measuring public opinion. So, no, they've been pretty accurate. It's difficult, however, to translate popular vote, you know, again, this 40% of all of Canada, into seats, because you get, with all the different parties, you don't know whether, you know, we got a lot of three-party races, and here we are in British Columbia where we have many tight three-party races. It could be a New Democrat, a conservative, or a liberal that comes out ahead on the 23rd.
On the book, American Backlash, you write that since the 1970s there's been a, quote, surprising radical change in the mental posture of the American people. What precipitated that? Was that the Vietnam War, Watergate?
Well, okay, it isn't going to be one thing, but, and in fact, that's when I write a chapter on why there has been this social change. We're talking about 10 or 12,000 words, but nobody has time for 10 or 12,000 words on an interview like this. The big picture story is that America changed direction subsequent to the Great Depression, which brought capitalism to its knees. The choices in the 1930s were fascism and communism, and Americans didn't want to choose one of those. What they did was elect a leader, a charismatic leader, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who gave them an activist government agenda, relief, recovery, reform. It was called the New Deal. And the Americans put a lot of faith in the state as the vehicle for the solutions to their economic and social problems. And they maintained that faith throughout the Second World War, after the war, GI Bill, throughout the 1950s with the Interstate Highway Program, a federal government-sponsored program under Eisenhower, and then with its fruition during the 1960s, the ultimate in state activism was the Great Society, the effort to eradicate poverty, the idealism of the civil rights movement, the feminism, environmentalism, and so on, a very activist era, which in turn led to a reaction where people felt that they had gone overboard with feminism, they'd gone overboard with their civil rights movement. Johnson said, we'll lose the South for a generation with the Civil Rights Act. He was wrong. It's been several generations and will probably continue on in the future. Busing and affirmative action as policies that came out of the civil rights movement were opposed not just in the South but in the North, where people were finding their kids transported to other schools or kids from poor areas transported into their schools. They didn't like that very much, whether it was in Chicago or Boston and so on. So you get a reaction against the what we would call socialism or state activism. You get a reaction against the idealism of the civil rights and feminism. You get a reaction against the hedonism that seemed to be over-the-top hedonism fueled by some powerful drugs. And in 1980, we have Ronald Reagan elected as a guy who's saying the government isn't the solution, the government is the problem. And so we've seen a reaction to major trends in the middle of the 20th century and a move to conservatism that sees the rise of the religious right, the moral majority, in response again to a lot of those trends, particularly the hedonistic trends, and the rise of a conservative backlash. But that backlash, I'm saying, is only part of the story, because what I'm seeing is among the broader culture not a growing conservatism, but rather other, what for most of us would be disturbing trends.
And that is people just don't care.
Exactly.
People just don't vote.
Yeah, it's the 50% of the population who are disengaged, and they're not just disengaged from voting. They're pretty well disengaged from any institutions of a civilized society, or at least a significant number of them are. And rather than becoming more family-oriented or more church-going or more religious or more introspective and empathetic to what it's like to be someone else, these are people who are into thrill-seeking, they're into jolts, they're into conspicuous consumption and shopping, they're into risk-taking, not just, we're not talking about the stock market here, but we're talking about physical risks, bungee jumping, going through a red light at 4 a.m. in the morning to see if you survive, of course, drug abuse, and then deeper into this Darwinistic survival of the fittest mentality is a growing orientation to sexism, racism, xenophobia, and violence in everyday life. Violence is normal. Violence is something you use to get what you want. The important thing is to get what you want. That is the overall direction of social change in the United States, and conservatism really is a reaction against that trend toward nihilism.
I'm talking with Michael Adams, president of Invronix and the author of a new book out, American Backlash, The Untold Story of Social Change in the United States, $35 from Viking. This idea of a culture war, many, many books have been written about the idea of a culture war. You see that when you watch MSNBC, CNN, Fox News. You watch it in the sitcoms and in the dramas. There is a culture war. And how do you explain that to someone who knows very little about it? It's the right versus the left.
Mm-hmm.
It's red
Democrat
states,
versus Republican.
Red yeah. versus blue.
Liberal versus conservative, red versus blue. Red in the United States means conservative, which in most of the 20th century the reds were the communists. But at any rate, so somebody who was colorblind actually applied the said that the Republican states in 2000 were red and the other ones were blue, and sort of that's what we're stuck with. Yeah, that's the war, the so-called war. So there's a you have to ignore the disengaged if you want to just talk about the culture war, and that's the war against. But from my point of view, these are among the engaged. So take the family. The Republicans, you know, with their focus on the family and family values, they're talking about mom, dad, and 2.5 kids, the traditional hierarchical family where father is master and mom is best supporting actress and the kids, you know, don't speak till spoken to. So that's the Republican family in a caricature. The Democrat family is, mom, it's egalitarian, it's heterarchical. Mom and dad are equal. The kids are equal, certainly once they get to be 8, 9, or 10. Everybody is a leader and a follower, so it's a much more modern orientation to the family, much more egalitarian, and it also allows for blended families, stepbrothers, stepsisters, you know, a lot of different kind of people can be part of the family, but they are in the family, and then you can even go to the point where Adam and Steve are the parents, and they have a couple of kids that they're raising. So that's all in the Democrat family, and then again, as I said, that contrasts with the Republican family. The Democrats and the Republicans, you know, disagree on this, but one thing they agree on is that the family is important, and that you orient yourself to them, and you try to raise kids. You do a good job. You spend time with them. You give them values. And we're talking here about moral values, not the kind I'm looking at, a broad range of values in my research. But you can contrast that to the family and the underclass, or the disengaged, or the nihilists. Family for them is irrelevant. Often, you know, dad, for some of the worst ones, dad was there for conception, but then disappeared. Or you get absent parents or abusive parents. The kids hate their parents. For them, the values that they got in their family were just terrible. They hate the family. They didn't think much of school. And they have this very nihilistic, narcissistic, egocentric, and violent orientation to life. And it's not just in the ghettos. The kids that were in Littleton at that Columbine school, these were middle-class kids, a lot of whom hated their parents and hated school and hated other sub-tribes within their groups, hated them to the point where some of them wanted to kill their fellow students.
So I guess Hurricane Katrina really showed the divide between the haves and the have-nots, did it not?
Very much, and it says, you know, if you're going to have a Darwinistic orientation of life, if the public domain is not really going to be that robust, then basically you shift the risk from the public, you know, a public risk where we all share it, to the private risk, you know, where you have your, you know, where politicians are not promising a new public policy that will help us all, but rather tax relief, where, you know, you give, instead of putting $1,000 into some public program, you give $1,000 back to the individual to spend as they see fit. Well, they're going to spend it on, well, they're going to buy stuff, but they also have to buy their own insurance, health insurance. They're going to have to take care of their own, you know, old age. They're going to have to, you know, make sure they have wise investments. They're going to have to also have private security in terms of maybe buying an SUV that makes them feel more secure, or have a surveillance system around their one-acre property. You know, that you shift, saying to the individual, you are the one who then will be the one to protect your family, and you have the money, and you have to do it. Where, again, in that era of the middle part of the century, and in Canada and in Europe, we tend to spread the risk among wider groups of people and have a lot more faith in government and the public domain, where we can invest our money and where everybody gets a return on that investment.
How do you engage the disengaged, though? And it seems to me that's what you have to do to reverse this direction that this country is heading into.
You're talking about America?
The United States, yeah.
The last time it happened, it took a Great Depression. I guess that's one of the things we've seen, is that the Democrats, in trying to persuade their fellow Americans to have faith in government, the government programs can be efficacious, have actually not been speaking to the core values of the United States for the last 20 years. They've been in the defensive. So it seems to me that the time where you get real, it's when you go to the doc and he says, if you keep behaving the same way you're behaving, you're going to have a heart attack and you're going to die. Well, that gets your attention. Or it doesn't, but at least that's the right. Riot Act, these books on the evolution of cultures, of civilizations and so on, Jared Diamond's book, Collapse and so on, are basically telling us that cultures thrive and decline based on the contradictions of on their own contradictions. Soviet communism had a run of about 75 years and then suddenly just collapsed under its own ideology that just didn't work. Will America ultimately in the next 5, 10, 15, or 20 years find that it gets to the point where it is the equivalent of the Great Depression and where they look to someone like an FDR who gives them faith in collective action? The only equivalent we've seen in America was as a result of 9/11, Americans pulled together not to solve their own domestic problems, but rather to give support to the military declaring war on terrorism, and as part of that, of course, was the collateral policy of overthrowing the government of Saddam Hussein.
Now, obviously, whatever happens in the United States affects Canadians and Canada. This direction that the United States is heading into, does that have any immediate effect, or is it long-term effect for us as well?
It has a big effect on us. I mean, there's a significant number of Canadians who are becoming more anti-American, not just anti-Bush, but anti-American. And there's another group of Canadians who actually think, you know, the way the Americans are going is the way that we ought to be going. The tilt right now is about 2-1 in favor of the let's have a Canadian point of view and questioning the direction that America is going in. But there is a significant minority who think that our American interests are our interests, and that our trying to go our way or our trying to become more European or more multilateral is naive, and that we actually should be standing shoulder to shoulder with America, both in terms of its domestic policies and in terms of its foreign policies. But the majority opinion is actually becoming more, more Canadian, and with a less of an emphasis that we are a colony of the United States.
What does your research and analysis say we're heading? Where is the United States heading? Where is Canada heading? Where do you see it going in 10 years? Is the culture war still going to be raging? Are we going to get along better, do you think?
I suspect as long as we have a government in Ottawa that's a government trying to run this country, that we're going to find that we have a lot of we're going to have a lot of trouble with the United States, because it's gone from being first among equals to just being first. The American people are scared. They're deferring to the leadership of the Republicans, of the Bush administration. Will they continue this way? Again, I think it takes a fairly major reversal before they change direction. And I don't know whether the Democrats are looking like the way they think they will have to lead the country is be kind of a Me Too version of the Republicans, because they're speaking to a population that is responding to patriotism, to traditional values. So I suspect America becomes ever more uniquely America, and Canada then, this 30 million population sitting on top of them up here, will be trying to be as smart as we can in defending our own interests. And they often aren't the same as American interests. And we are looking in the future, towards major issues having to do with our resources, our energy resources, and so on. So we'll be looking to having the North American Free Trade Agreement lived up to. Softwood lumber is an example where we thought we had an agreement. We thought we had dispute settlement mechanisms that would work. We can appeal to the World Trade Organization. And as we sit on the precipice of a new conservative government, I think there'll be a high expectation that Stephen Harper, who apparently is someone the Americans like a little more than the liberals, maybe he will be able to do, you know, I think there'll be an expectation that he's going to be deliver for Canada. So I think you're going to see Canada remaining more Canadian and becoming ever more Canadian as we gain confidence that we are different and we can be independent and autonomous. And I think America goes its route. Given that they're much more powerful than us, it's incumbent upon us to understand the United States, the direction it's going. Don't presume they are us or we are them. And that's why I've written this book, is to help both Americans understand themselves better, but help Canadians understand their next-door neighbor. They're powerful and somewhat fearful and increasingly Darwinistic, a next-door neighbor needing to understand and know them better.
It is a fascinating and interesting book. Michael, thanks so much for joining us today.
Joseph, thank you for having me on this show. Thank you.
The book is called American Backlash, The Untold Story of Social Change in the United States, 35